You are about to hear an interview with Kamal Santamaria. Since this episode was recorded, Kamal has left Al Jazeera and returned to New Zealand, where he began presenting the breakfast programme on TVNZ. In May 2022, certain allegations came to light, which has since resulted in Kamal leaving the programme. I wish to make it known that I was not aware of any of the allegations made prior to recording this interview with Kamal. After careful consideration, I've decided that this chat will stay online, but with an advisory that this was recorded in January 2022, prior to any allegations being made. Thank you for listening. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the TV Live podcast. I'm Rob Francis, and it is great to be back after a couple of years away from you. I'm really looking forward to bringing you some new guests over the course of the next 12 months. Now, my guest today is one of New Zealand's finest exports. He began his career at TV3 in New Zealand before moving to Sky News in Australia. And in 2005, he was one of the launch presenters for Al Jazeera's English language service. He's covered four US elections, and this time last year, he was preparing for the inauguration of President Biden. It's TV Live's International Presenter of the Year 2020. Please give it up for Kamal Santamaria. Kamal, welcome.
One of New Zealand's finest exports. Goodness me. That...
To be honest, I don't know many, so...
It's very, very kind of you, and I'm thrilled to be... This reminded me, yes, this time last year, it was 19th of January we were recording this, and yeah, I was sitting on a freezing rooftop in Washington, we're getting ready for inauguration, yeah.
It was an amazing time. It was an amazing... event to watch. So let's go right back to the beginning.
First of all, let me just say, podcast, I'm an avid podcast listener, and that is why I have failed to dress up today, because I was thinking, oh, it's podcast, let's be audio. So please forgive the fact that I look an absolute wreck today, but also working from home, so you know, absolutely. We're allowed to look like how we want, right?
Absolutely. Well, I've got my ATV shirt on today. For those watching, we are going to be uploading the video to the YouTube channel, and I'll share all the links, of course, on social media. So let's start right back at the very beginning. Did you always want to work in television as a child?
Yes. It's as simple as that. I count myself to be very fortunate, Robin, that I knew 10 years old that's what I was going to. I knew it was going to be journalism, and I was fairly certain it was going to be television. I was an absolute TV nerd growing up, always watched the news, didn't really read fiction books and all that. It was always had to be, everything had to be factual for me. The channel I ended up working for, it only launched when I was 9 years old. I mean, we only had two TV channels in New Zealand until 1989. I think I always knew, and I count myself very lucky, because I see so many young people these days, you know, finishing high school, for example, and then going to university, not really knowing what they want to do, and coming out 3 years later with a degree and thinking, well, what do I do now? So I count myself very, very fortunate to have known and to have had that path pretty much set out from there.
Fantastic. So you came out of high school and you started your job at TV3 in New Zealand. So how did that all come about, and what did you do at TV3?
Because I'm a pushy little bugger. That's how it came about. imagine a 17, almost 18-year-old sending a letter to the head of news at TV3 in New Zealand saying, oh, look, I'm going to be going to university, but I'd really like to do some work experience with you. And the head of news and current affairs at the time, a guy called Mark Jennings, inexplicably wrote back to me and said, sure, come in for a meeting. I thought, well, this is ridiculous. But I went and I did a screen test and a voice test, and I think they saw potential, but I was 18. I was a baby, an absolute baby. And so they sort of said, well, you know, come back in a few years. So that was kind of what I did. I mean, I went away for another year. I didn't go to university in the end. And my mother will probably never forgive me for that. And I went back to them at the end of the year and I said, look, I've done some courses. I've done this. I've done that. I've smoked and drunk all year to make myself look older. and they took me in on work experience in the end and said, look, come in over Christmas and New Year. Quiet time. Summer, of course, in New Zealand. And that was the start of the roller coaster. I was on... I had a report on air on my first day of work experience on the 6 o'clock news.
Wow.
And that's That's ludicrous thinking
that's
back.
That's unbelievable. That's fantastic. So from TV3, you went across to Australia to present for Sky News Australia,
yeah,
so, helping to establish the Melbourne Business Bureau. Is that right?
Yeah. So 3 years at TV3, and you know, would have stayed longer, but I think we are born travellers, New Zealanders, and we, you know, like to spread our wings a bit. And Australia is great because you don't need a visa or anything; you just hop on a plane and go there. So I left TV3 end of 2001 and went to Australia with nothing, and just started to blag my way around again. I did a bit of freelance work over the summer for TV3, and then a freelance cameraman I was working with said, oh, look, Sky want to, they need a reporter for their Melbourne Bureau. Are you interested? I'm like, yeah, sure, I can do business news. No idea, but wasn't going to let that stop me. And I worked for a chap called David Kosh, who is now the host of Sunrise in Australia, a very, very successful breakfast TV host on Channel 7. At that stage, he was the finance guy, and we did finance for Channel 7 and for Sky and all of that. And I was based out of Channel 7 in Melbourne by myself there. And those 3 years there, Rob, were so formative because I had to film, report, edit, present everything. And it taught me it taught me about simplicity and just getting stuff done quickly. When you haven't got a whole crew and army to do everything for you, you've just got to, you know, I should watch my language here. Get stuff done.
No, you can swear. You are allowed to swear.
I'll be a good...
That's staying in.
Bring my seat down. There we go. I think I've done that on air once. So it taught me so much, and it was brilliant. And it taught me also just to remember news basics. Yes, it was business news, and I had to get up to speed with a whole lot of stuff, but also you just treat it as news and find the facts and make it interesting for people. Simple as that. It was... I loved those 3 years there, really did.
Excellent. And then from Sky News Australia, you go to Al Jazeera. Now, you've been there from the very start. So what preparations did you make in order to get the channel live on air?
Right. Well, I should tell you the how I got to Al Jazeera story first, because it's another one of those jammy things which I've done. Yeah, I was living in London at the time and couldn't get any, you know, I was applying for jobs all over the place at Sky and ITV News Channel, rest in peace, yeah. And couldn't get a job interview anywhere. And then I saw this thing, Al Jazeera International, as it was called then, was going to be launching, and they were looking for a deputy director of news. I was like, right, I'm applying for that. Of course, knowing I'm nowhere near anywhere close to being a deputy director of news, but it was my in. Yeah. And you know, took my show tape along, and they called me back and they sort of said, well, look, we've got a job for you as a producer in London. I was like, yes, awesome. And they said, but you could go to Doha and be a presenter if you like. And then they explained the perks of tax-free salaries and the like.
Oh, yeah.
and I thought, oh, I've got to try. I mean, I'd not done any full-time 24-hour news presenting before. So there was a bit of doubt. But I thought, you know what? Doubt's never gotten me anywhere before. I just go and do it and figure it out along the way. And so, yeah, moved to Doha in November 2005. And we actually only ended up launching a year later, November 2006. Took a long time to get things going. As anyone who's, you know, built anything from scratch knows, even if it's just an extension on your house, there will be delays.
Yeah.
And it took us a full year. And that was, in hindsight, brilliant, because it meant I could learn, I could make mistakes. We were in full broadcast mode, full piloting mode. It just wasn't being seen by anyone. And then one day we finally flicked the switch and it went on air. So in hindsight, fantastic to be able to learn off air effectively. Tremendous time.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that's always I've always admired about Al Jazeera is its presentation. The studios look stunning. The graphics look incredible. I mean, it's one of the smartest looking news channels in the world.
And we've never had a major rebrand. I'm a total news geek. I love watching what other TV channels do. We've never in 15 years gone through a complete change. We had a refresh start of 2020, and there was some fairly big changes there, but still the fundamentals were there.
Yeah.
What we'd always been doing. And it's, I think the object is to keep it as clean and as simple as looking as you can, so that you're watching the pictures and you're not watching all the other stuff. again, I love watching other channels, but sometimes it's too distracting. There's too many side panels and tickers and straps and all of that. And sometimes you just actually go, let's just watch the pictures, shall we?
Yeah, the pictures must speak for themselves. So you have presented many, many programs for Al Jazeera over the years, NewsGrid and Counting the Cost, just to name a couple. Of all the programs you've actually presented for Al Jazeera, which one would you say was your favorite?
Oh, yeah, NewsGrid. That was my baby. That was, I'd done Counting the Cost, the business show, for 7 years. And I loved that because I got to travel places and meet amazing people, do interesting stories. And then they said, look, for the 10-year anniversary, we want to launch this new show. And you're the person we want to do it. And I was thankful for that because it played to my strengths of ad-libbing and technology and social media and just talking, basically being a lot more casual. The formal sit down news has never suited me. I'm not that guy. I was once a coach we once had, an on air coach once called me the anti anchor, in the sort of spirit of someone like Anderson Cooper, who was always, he was never a sit down and read guy.
Yeah.
So and again, NewsGrid, we piloted it off air. We came up with this whole idea from scratch and went to air with it. We got an Emmy nomination for it, which was incredible. Unfortunately, staffing and other internal issues went into hiatus and has never made it back again. But I really enjoyed that because I think I was a better journalist. I was far more involved in the process. Because with regular news reading, it's half hour bulletin, hour bulletin. You'll just keep going and you don't have that much time to really experiment. This was a daily show where we really got to throw ourselves into it. I miss that. And I think, as I say, I'm happy to admit I was probably a better journalist then.
So let's talk now about a day in your life that you'll probably never forget, the day of September the 11th, 2001. From my research, you were the only Australian New Zealand news anchor.
Oh, I'm gonna have to correct you there, and you may want to actually leave this out in the end. No, 2 months after 9/11, there was a plane crash at JFK Airport, right. American Airlines, and I was there for that.
Right,
it happened to be the day I met my wife, actually, in the
departure. That's nice.
On that particular occasion, yes, and it was in its own way, it was extraordinary to be sitting on the tarmac and seeing this flame and smoke off in the distance and finding out that's a plane that crashed. That was a plane in front of us that crashed.
Yeah.
And of course, 2 months after 9/11, you can only imagine what it was like. And it was just everything shut down, bridges and tunnels shut down, everything shut down. But I did manage to report from there that day, and that was exciting in its own way. And as I say, I ended up meeting my wife that day, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, I will try not to rely on Wikipedia too much in future for my research. So my apologies for that. So let's talk about the US elections that you have covered. You have covered four US elections, is that right?
That's correct. Two Obamas, a Trump, and a Biden.
And a Biden. I like that. Yeah, I'll have two Obamas, a Biden and a Trump. So what sort of preparation did you have to do to anchor these big events? Because I assume a lot of work goes on behind the scenes.
Huge amount. So my job was to be the numbers guy at the video wall. And so the immediate problem you have, first of all, is that I'm in Doha and it's overnight. So I've got to switch everything around and everything becomes an overnight broadcast. And it was the first year, it was just study, study, study. Like I wrote a page of notes on every US state, even the ones that didn't matter, the Alaskas and the Kentuckys and things, you know, which you always know are going to go a certain way. I wrote a page on everyone, and it was color coded and detailed and all of that. But for each subsequent election, I had all of those and I could just tweak them and, you know, update the information. So it was actually quite helpful in the end. We did Super Tuesday and the 2008 election. And I mean, that was just that moment Obama was elected. You knew you were watching something extraordinary happen. And it was exhausting in the best possible way. And that's how I would describe every one of those elections, exhausting in the best possible way. You do so much prep. We do pre-records of, you know, virtual graphics and things like that. And so much rehearsing. We do fake data, sort of for the few nights beforehand, we have the AP sending fake data to us so we can start, you know, reacting in real time. I've had amazing producers who've known so much about US elections have been feeding me information in my ear. And then it's just up to me to tap dance out there and make sense of it, basically. The last one, 2020, because we had no result on the night, I just kept going. I think I broadcast for 13 hours. And I've been awake for basically 24. And I think at the end of it, I just cried. I think I kind of just went down on my haunches in the newsroom and started crying because I didn't know what was going on anymore.
I don't think anybody knew what was going on at the time.
and ended up in hospital a couple of days later needing rehydration and stuff because I just worked myself into the ground. But, you know, US, there's nothing like a US election. Nothing, absolutely. Nothing. Nothing compares. No, it really
not,
doesn't.
Not even the British general election.
I couldn't possibly comment, Rob. There is something. It's the lunacy of the American elections. You know, the way the Electoral College works and things like that, which means you're just doing these sums. I've kept my notes actually from 2016, where I was furiously trying to calculate, can Hillary Clinton still do this? And in the moment when I had to announce Donald Trump had won, I've never watched that piece of video back again because I know it was a really poor moment of broadcasting because we were all in shock and I just let it show. I just kind of shrugged and went, well, that's it. He's done it because none of us expected it. And no. that was all on us. And we should have been prepared. And I definitely should have been more professional. I said, I've never watched it back because it was just a low point in a few ways. Let's say that.
Yeah. Okay. So last year, we spoke about this at the start, you were covering the inauguration of President Biden this time last year. I will remember the inauguration for the meme of Bernie Sanders sitting in his chair. That was a great moment. what was your favourite moment of covering the inauguration last year?
So we're sitting on this rooftop with all the other broadcasters there. And it's weird because your back is too. It's all happening behind you. And you're listening to it in your ear and you're watching monitors. So it's a little bit backwards and you can feel things are happening behind you. There wasn't obviously the big crowd and noise, but you sense, okay, this thing's happening behind me, but I need to keep watching my screen to see what's happening. For me, oddly, it was the moment when Garth Brooks, the American country singer, sung Amazing Grace.
Oh, that was beautiful.
It was. And I didn't have a co-anchor with me, but I had, you know, what we term a presenter's friend, a person who sits there and you can just talk to at any time, basically. And a lovely lady, her name was Jennifer Victor, an academic from George Mason University. And we both just sort of started singing instinctively, just quietly, because you couldn't help get caught up in that moment. It's such a beautiful piece of music. And you realized, oh, this is maybe the madness is about to end. I'd seen Trump's helicopter fly, Marine One, fly off earlier in the day. And that was sort of, we were all sort of waving at him thinking,
yeah,
oh, he's going, he's off to Mar-a-Lago. And maybe the last 4 years of lunacy are over. So I think, yeah, oddly, that was the moment for me. Oh, and the moment I met John King and Wolf Blitzer from CNN and I completely lost it. I just, you know, it was, I totally fanboyed them, totally stalked them. My producer was great. He was like, introduced me to John King, said, oh, this is Kamal. He does what you do at Al Jazeera. I'm like, yeah, seriously, I don't do that because John King is the king. Oh, that was amazing. That was so cool.
Brilliant, brilliant. So, I mean, you've had many great moments covering big news events. Has there ever been a story that has been very tough to cover?
Oh, yes. I would differentiate between studio and in the field. Obviously, in the field, I went to the Philippines after Typhoon Haiyan back in, 2013. And that was one of those, you arrived there from the mainland. We were on the mainland. We arrived to an island called Tacloban, and it had been flattened. I'd never, ever seen anything like it. And I saw little kids, you know, the same age as my daughter at that time, you know, going through the rubbish and dead bodies on the road and boats that were 2 kilometers inland. And I met a fisherman who'd lost his boat and lost everything and obviously his livelihood with it as well. And he showed me this plate which had 5 or 6 fish on it, which he cooked. That was all he had, food and catch. And then he offered it to me. I was like, oh, for God's sake. You know, it just, that they were so humble, such humble people. And then, of course, you know, I hopped on a helicopter the next day and flew out. And it left a big mark. It was sort of very humbling and just reminds you of, it's so cliche, but it reminds me of what you've got and how incredibly fortunate. So I'd say in that sense, yeah, that one. And then, you know, in the studio, it's funny, when it's happening, you just go into work mode. You just go into, right, I've got to deliver this news. But my philosophy in those big moments, in those, you know, Egyptian revolution moments, January 6th moment, those big things, you just have to talk about what's on the screen. Talk about what's on the screen. The viewer is probably as freaked out as you are if it's something really crazy. So basically hold their hand through it and get Gaza wars, you know, God, we've had so many of them, unfortunately. But that was like that as well. It was very much, I need to sit here and talk to the viewers like I'm talking to them across the table with a cup of coffee and just explaining what's going on, because it's the mind can't quite deal with it sometimes. And I always think about that when I'm doing the job.
What's been your proudest moment in broadcasting? There's got to be a standout moment that you've been really proud to be a part of.
Oh, God. 15 years on Al Jazeera, and okay, I'll have to list a few. Okay, inauguration, obviously, because that was just one of those moments where to actually be there for. It's one thing to be anchoring in the studio, it's another thing to be there. No, I'm struggling to think, because there's too many, and there's too many for different reasons. You know, there's these awful moments where Benazir Bhutto, former Pakistani Prime Minister, was assassinated, and I was on air for that. And there's chaos. It's absolute chaos. And you've got to make sense of it very quickly. Egyptian Revolution was obviously a huge period for Al Jazeera as well, and we knew people are watching us. Our channel is live streaming on the front page of YouTube right now. People are watching. Virginia Tech, the shooting at Virginia Tech, I was on air for that and was talking to a student who'd holed himself up inside the campus radio station whilst the shooter was still active. Those sorts of things, you don't forget them. Unfortunately, I've had too few moments out in the field, certainly recently, but went to the elections in Zimbabwe. I was quite proud of that, because that was a time when no other broadcaster was allowed in. And I remember someone texting me actually saying, BBC's on the northern border at Mozambique. It was George Alagaya, and Jim Clancy from CNN's on the southern border in South Africa, and you're the only one inside in Harare. And I was like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was quite exciting, yeah.
Let's take a few questions now from the TV Live podcast followers and TV Live forum members. Aaron Reed is asking, is there a difference in writing a script for a regular news bulletin compared to a news hour bulletin, or is it all the same?
For me, there is, definitely. I always think a news hour is a chance to do fewer stories in more depth. Certainly we did that with NewsGrid, and I still think that is something. And I feel... you need to write it in a different style. It needs to not just be a here's what's happening right now. It's more, I feel, more issue driven. There is a big, you know, whatever the story is right now, you know, if it's coronavirus, we could just say, oh, record numbers, this, that, that. It's like, no, let's actually find the underlying thing here. Let's find the issue here. So that's always my philosophy, certainly. And I like to use my iPad and Google Earth and graphs and things like that to help expand the story a bit more, because you've got a chance to do that. You shouldn't just be stacking and trying to fill an hour. You should be building quality content. So, yeah, I think there is definitely there's a different way of writing it.
Absolutely. James Martin has been asking a few questions.
The one and only.
Yeah, and not that James Martin, for those of you who are wondering, the other James Martin. Long story.
Not the chef.
No, not the chef, and not somebody else. Outside of Al Jazeera, who do you most admire in the world news business?
He's setting me up here, isn't he? He's setting me up because he knows I've got some good friends in amongst international news. Karen Ginoni, 2019 international TV
TV Live presenter of the year 2019.
Of the year.
Hi, Karen, if you're watching.
Exactly, she will be, and I have to make mention of that. That and yeah, we've developed a little fun little rivalry there. Yeah, I met Karen on Twitter, and we just became very good friends. And it's really nice knowing other people at other channels, because we're all just sitting in our studios talking into the void, especially on international news. You know, if you work on local news, there are more consequences almost. You know, you've got ratings, you've got people seeing you in the street and stuff like that, and there's more to it in a strange way. So with international news, we're just every hour almost out into the void. So I'm a big fan of other news channels. I have to keep saying that. I love, you know, I will go to CNN for American news and for election news, because, you know, where else would I go? They've got the resources, they've got the people. As I said, John King before, I think he's just tremendous. Hala Gharani from CNN, I think she's fantastic as well. She's got a great way of just making every story feel like she's just talking about it. She's not reading a script. She's just like, hey, here's some more news that I've got for you. And that's a real skill to have, to be able to do that. And not many people have that. Mark Austin over at Sky, always been a big fan of Mark, because these are people who, in some cases, I was exposed to at the start of my career, because when at TV3, ITVN was our international partner. So I would sit there, this is, in hindsight, it's hilarious. I would sit there clipping up a package from ITN News at 10, and I'd be putting in the graphics, Shuli Ghosh reporting, Felicity Barr reporting, Lauren Taylor, and then I ended up working with all of them. Which is, you know, and yeah, so Mark Austin was someone I first came across there. And Jake Tapper from CNN as well. Yeah, so many. I like what other channels do as well. I think, you know, Sky does a great job of rolling and keeping it moving all the time. They do a tremendous job of that sort of thing. I love TV news. It's as simple as that.
Honourable mention to the current TV Live International News Presenter of the Year. Hello, Ben Boulos, if you are watching.
Ben Boulos, exactly.
James was also asking, if you didn't become a journalist, what other career path would you have taken?
I'm ashamed to say this, but a politician.
Oh.
I know. When I was 17, I was a youth parliamentarian in New Zealand. Every MP got to select a youth from their own constituency to represent them in youth parliament for a week. And they really did, well, maybe it was 3 days, 4 days, but they shut down parliament for that week, and we kind of took over and did our own thing. And I loved it. You know, obviously public speaking I enjoy, and debating and all that, and I came out of that really thinking, oh, I could do this, but the media thing was too strong. I think it was already ingrained in me by then.
Roger Darthwell from TV Live Forum has asked, because you've worked in Doha now for 15 years, do you ever feel homesick? Do you ever miss being at home?
I've been gone. This is my home. I've been gone from New Zealand for 20 years now. It will always, obviously New Zealand will always be my home, but I consider this, you know, home is where your family is, where your life is, and it's actually 16 years here now, more than 16 years. And the amazing thing with Doha is having seen it develop, you know, the city area here, there were maybe 4-5 buildings when I moved here. Now it's this incredible metropolis. All the construction which has gone on ahead of the World Cup, seeing a country grow from when I moved here, 800,000 people now to sort of 3 million. I'm so glad I chose this job and not the producer in London job, because otherwise I just wouldn't have got to experience all of this. So I wouldn't say I feel particularly homesick, just because I've just been gone for such a long time now.
Final question from James Martin, and I can't believe I'm asking this.
Oh, good Lord.
Did James Martin teach you everything you know?
See, he claims this. He claims he will. He says this to that many presenters.
I know.
And we all let him away with it. Honestly, it's people in this. As I was saying before, when you're in this sort of void of speaking to cameras all day. And this is where social media has changed it all, that we can actually interact with our viewers. And people like James are great in that sense, because it's instant feedback. They're people who care. They're people who are interested in the minutiae of what we do. And yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you to everyone for sending
their... No, it did not teach me a bloody thing.
No, that's good, because he hasn't taught me anything either. Thank you to everyone for sending their questions. Most appreciated. Do you have a favourite news programme outside of Al Jazeera?
Probably... I have to think about this now. I like, because again, you get the split between CNN domestic and international. And actually, I think over the years, we've gotten more and more domestic stuff. Yeah. I like the breakfast show from America, New Day, which is at 2 p.m. here. So it's perfect timing if I'm home, because it's just, I just think the anchors are very, very good at what they do. They have very good guests, and they're, and you know, I just learn any TV which I'm learning from, I'm down with that. So I do like that on the domestic side. On the international side, I mentioned Hala Gharani before. I think her Hala Gharani Tonight, her show is very good as well. Trying to think of any sort of others, because a lot of the appointment to view television is gone, hasn't it? You know, like, I remember Sky for a long time had really, when they relaunched in 2005, was it?
Yeah, 2005.
Yeah, and they had real appointment to view stuff. It was the Julie Etchingham show and Kay Burley's and all that. And then that sort of has been flattened. I think they still brand things.
Yeah.
But the shows aren't necessarily that much different from each other.
No.
And actually, on that branding, one of my absolute bugbears, I can't stand it when the branding is kept for a show and it's a different presenter. When you get Neil Patterson, say, filling in for Kay Burley, and it still says Kay Burley behind him.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
You're not the only person that thinks that. A lot of people have been discussing that on the forum over the last few weeks. So, yeah. But yeah, the state of television news at the moment, I mean, the rise of fake news and all this talk about bias, especially with the BBC and all the recent talk about the BBC license fee and everything. What would you say, how would you just sum up the state of television news at the moment?
So I think, and I've always said this, I think there's always going to be a place for us. I think when... you know, God forbid a plane flies into a building or something like that, people still will gather together around a TV set, I think. Unfortunately, technology is getting so good that you don't have to do that anymore. So I think we still have a role there, and that's where we're almost like curators and guides, where we take people through those earth-shattering events and use our own knowledge and background and skills to supplement that. That said, if you as a TV journalist now are not upskilling and being part of digital and social, then you're going to get left behind. And this is why a lot of the stuff I do now, say the stuff with the Google Maps and graphs on coronavirus and all that, I'm doing all that for television, but with an eye to social as well. I'm thinking, can I get this out there? Tag the right people in there, get some, and yeah, it's about shameless self-promotion sometimes as well, but it's also about getting information out there. And you've got to be able to use every platform you want. Editing stuff on a computer, on a phone, it's not that difficult anymore. And if you apply yourself in that sense, I think, rather than worrying about everything in the studio, then I think that's the right track to go, because you just, the number of jobs in the newsroom are shrinking all the time. I don't know how long the TV anchor, we're important, but you know, obviously the days of the voice of God, of Tom Brokaw and Peter Jennings and Dan Rather is gone. Those bulletins just don't matter as much anymore. So I'm going a bit in circles here, but I think the point I'm trying to make is that you have to evolve here, because it's moving too fast. It's moving way too fast.
Yeah, absolutely. We're living in very interesting times at the moment.
And I worry... just quickly, you mentioned bias and things like that. This is so troubling. You know, taking out of the equation the Fox Newses, and for example, which are, you know, openly biased like that. People are looking for bias. They want you to be. They want to find your weakness so that they can hop on social media and start trolling you. So that's, you know, that's always in my mind. But it's become more and more about balance. You have to be as balanced as possible, whilst not getting into the flat earthers or the climate deniers, things like that. We are treading a real tightrope with this thing now. I think that came up with the BBC the other day, didn't it? The flat earth or something, you know, with sort of controversy over whether you give those sorts of people a voice or not. And yeah, balance, sure, but also logic.
Absolutely.
It's not easy now. And that's where social media and the likes have made our jobs a lot more difficult.
Would you say that the pandemic has, the COVID pandemic has changed the way you do things on air?
Not, well, I think we've done a lot more sort of public service journalism, certainly in the early days of the pandemic, talking about masks, talking about social distancing and all these sorts of things, news you can use. And I think there's always room for that. There always, always is. You have to remember your viewers and that you're actually trying to inform them. But the way, certainly the way I've done the news and delivered news, I don't think it's changed. You know, we've done it with a lot fewer people. It's been amazing in one sense. I didn't know so much TV production could be done by people at home. And, you know, unfortunately, with the way Omicron is at the moment, we are back to that. We're back to a lot of people working from home. It takes away the buzz of the newsroom, which is a bit sad. And you know, the communication is obviously not as strong. But it's been eye-opening to see what we can do. And in the end, I mean, I've just kept going in, Rob, and kept reading the news. You know, I've seen plenty of presenters who did read from home and things like that. I've never done that. And in the end, it was just keep going in, keep reading the news, because it's not going to stop.
So do you have any advice, finally, for anyone who wants to become a journalist? What would you suggest?
See, it's so... It's funny. It's 23 years since I, you know, sent that letter to the head of news at TV3. And that was the way you did it back then, right? You wrote a letter and sent it and hoped to get a reply. And it's just, it's so different now. And I think the problem is that news executives are probably inundated with stuff now, and for a lot fewer positions. So I think you've got to sort of take advantage of the tools that you do have, and which I didn't have 23 years ago. But you think about it, you can basically start your own channel with YouTube or Vimeo. You've got things like Medium and Substack, where if you've got, you know, want to start writing your own stuff, you can create an entire portfolio of your work quite easily. And then when the time comes and you have got an in with someone, you send them a link and say, I mean, God, when I was looking for jobs in London, I remember taking my show tape and getting VHS copies made of it and sneaking them into ITN. I couldn't get them in the front door, so I went round the I went round to the mailroom and delivered these things to David Mannion and Dominic Crossley Holland, and you know, and you know, you just had to find ways. Now there's still room for that, believe me, there's still room for being creative, but you've got so much available to you online, sister. And also think about everything you're putting online. Obviously, as we know, everything we put online gets, you know, is still there. But think about how it looks. You want it to look professional. You want it to look like you are ready to make a step up. Not that you've got, oh, here's a whole lot of stuff which I've just uploaded. No. And honestly, I will plug my own YouTube channel here. But what I've done with mine is playlists and icons and formulaic ways of titling each thing, because you need to show that you're organized, that you've got a chronological order to what you're doing, things like that. So that's the advice I give. Use the tools you've got and be thinking one step ahead. Be thinking, this is something which a news boss needs to see, and they don't have much time, and they will make a decision pretty damn quickly if they have to. You don't have the time for, oh, look at this letter I got from this young man, I'll write back to him. There's none of that anymore. So you've got to be a lot smarter, I think, to get into this business. And unfortunately, because there's a lot fewer jobs as well.
Absolutely. Some fantastic advice there. Kamal Santamaria, thank you very much for being a guest on the TV Live podcast. You can follow him on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and his website at kamalsantamaria.com. So that's the first one. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. Don't forget, if you want to keep up to date with the podcast, you can do so at tvlive.site/podcast, and it's TV Live Podcast on Twitter. Thank you for listening. I will see you all again very, very soon. For myself and Kamal, it's goodbye.
Bye-bye.